down to their last strike. Monasterio waits. Lats throws. And a swing and a miss. He got him. Monasterio strikes out to end the game. Red Sox tried to battle in front of an electric Fenway crowd. But in the end, the homers given up by Connolly early, too much to overcome. Wilson Contreras did his best tonight, two homers. But the Rangers salvage the series finale, and they win it here 6-4.
Rich and Ken with Ted Johnson.
It is 93.7 WEEI, and there was a little bit of a break from the misery that has been surrounding Fenway Park ever since really the beginning of the season. A competent baseball team took the field, one that actually could score runs, have a little bit of offense. Listen, they didn't win the final game, but at least the crowd was fun. They won a series, so...
I haven't done the math on this, but if they win 2 out of 3 the rest of the way, will they even get back to 500?
Like, I mean, that's... They got a long way to go.
I'm assuming, yes.
They have a long, long way to go.
Yeah, I bet you they do.
11 games under. They got to have more than 11 series left. So.
You would think so. But Sean McAdam, who we love his writing over at Mass Live, he wrote a very interesting article. Actually, he's written a bunch of things that are interesting, but one of my favorite parts of it was in his article, some things I think. He talked about John Henry and his increased visibility this season. So he said, let's get Sean on. I got to hear more about this. Sean, thanks for joining the show, my friend.
Pleasure to be on, guys. How are you?
Hey, doing really good. First of all, this has got to be a weird season to cover this team, correct? I mean, there's days where we come on here and I'm just like, I don't know how much worse it can get. And then they find a new hole, and then they find a new hole. And then you get a weird weekend like this where you're like, maybe they're okay. What's it been like covering the 2026 Red Sox?
Yeah, strange and not very entertaining from a baseball standpoint. You know, we don't, as you guys know, we don't root for the teams we cover. But I think if you talk to most people who are on the beat, you'd rather have a team in competition and playing well. For any number of reasons, more people are interested, so more people are reading you. Players are in a better mood; it's more relevant. All of that stuff, and you can't find a team that has been less relevant in 2026 than your Boston Red Sox so far through 2.5 months of the season. And you know, it doesn't look. And I was one of those guys thinking, like, I'm not ready to completely write them off for the longest time. I thought there would be one of those stretches where, you know, they'd win 8 out of 10 and inch closer to 500. And then once you're near 500 in 2026, you're a de facto wild card contender, but they can't seem to get out of their own way. I'm still trying to come to grips with the fact that Friday and Saturday represented not just their first series win at home, but the first time, first series win at home since early April, but the first time since that same time span that they had won consecutive games at home.
That's
hard to do, or hard not to do.
It is, Sean. As a matter of fact, that Tampa series, the final game was an early game, obviously, and it ended like during our show. So we got on around like 4:30. And, like, we immediately had full phone lines. It was a funeral for that team. Like, I mean, it was just people couldn't wait to pile onto them. And I kind of at that point was like, I don't know how you can recover from this. Now, listen, it was nice to have a little taste this week. But the one thing that we've been talking about is, you know, we had Buster Olney on talking about how ownership was now calling people trying to get like a bat in here. And maybe that's changed because Sam Kennedy said they were pivoting. It's just an absolute mess. But when you talk about ownership, this article you wrote where it sounds like John Henry is more visible right now, like what's going on? Why do you believe he's there? And how weird is it that he's there, but he's still not speaking to the media?
Yeah, he's still not speaking to the media on the record. He was in New York at Yankee Stadium weekend before last, and I chatted with him for a while. So did a couple of other reporters. But it was all sort of off the record, on background, and just sort of generalities as to the motivation behind being more visible. I don't know, frankly. I mean, John is pretty inscrutable, even in the best of times. And I'm not sure what the motivation is. Maybe part of it is to, you know, provide a definitive pushback to the sell the team chance, that he figures that if he's around a lot and on the field and engaged, then people will stop suggesting that he's getting ready to sell the team. And by the way, he's not selling the team. Spoiler alert. But it is a little, I'll say this. We've seen him more on the field, around the ballpark, more in the last 2.5 months than maybe the previous 3 or 4 seasons combined.
Wow.
What the motivation or what the reason is behind that, I really don't know, except that I know, just speaking briefly to him informally and talking to people around the club, that he is very frustrated with how things have gone this year.
Is that part of the problem? Like, I'm starting to think about it. Like, last 2.5 months have sucked, and you've got Connor Falefa saying there was too many people around at home. And, like, I mean, do you think that maybe that might be making the players feel a little nervous or on edge? I mean, do you think
maybe that's the point?
Because yeah, I would say that his contact with the players is fairly incidental. He's not in the clubhouse. He's not coming in after games. You see him on the field. It's not as if he's become this nuisance and he's like sticking his face into a game of pepper or guys stretching or interrupting them getting ready for games. Frankly, I'm not sure how many players on this team know him or have had any real contact with him. He's not, it's not like he's omnipresent or that he's yapping away with players, coaches, and a manager, but he is there more. And I'm always told that he's around more than you think he is in years past. And I don't have any reason to doubt that, but he also very carefully limited his exposure, that he wasn't on the field. You would see him in his suite watching games. He'd be in his office during the afternoon. But for whatever reason, and we could all invest time in trying to guess at why this is, he definitely is more visible and present this year than he has been in any recent season.
Hey, Sean, it's about a year ago today that the Red Sox traded Rafi Devers to the Giants. And now reports are that the Giants are open to business in trading Rafi Devers. Just how would you grade that trade? What did you think of it at the time? And how do you think that trade has aged up to this point?
Well, Ted, you know, general managers like to tell you, oh, it was a great trade that helped both teams. Those are the best trades. This is a trade that helped neither. you know, one team unloaded money and what they perceived to be an attitude problem. By all accounts, Devers has been fairly amenable to what the Giants asked of him. He played first base for them, which he didn't want to do here. But all he did was transfer that salary and that underperformance from one team to the other across the coast. I mean, you know, the Giants are now saddled with whatever's left there, $215 million or $220 now. It was $250-something when the trade got made. So they've eaten up about $30 million of that, don't have much to show for it. And the Red Sox almost have literally nothing to show for it. They've given away all the parts, some of which they didn't need, some of which they should have held on to, like James Tibbs. Part of the Dustin May trade, which sort of compounded things. You end up thinking, well, they got a young bat here and maybe that could pay off. And then they turn around and use that to trade for Dustin May, who's horrible for them, but has a complete game shutout for the Cardinals last night. So, I mean, that's kind of the perfect leftover from this deal. It's truly a deal that didn't help either side, and it continues to haunt both franchises, neither of whom have winning records a year later.
All right, Sean, can you hang in there for 2 minutes? We just got to do a quick hydration break, and sure, we will be right back. We're not going anywhere. 2 minutes. And we are broadcasting from the Ketchus Law Injury Attorney Studio. No fee unless you win. Sean McAdam from Mass Live is on with us, trying to figure out what the hell this team does to become more entertaining. I mean, as I said, you had one competent weekend, But I don't know how long that's going to last. And Ken, you were taking a look at some players that potentially this team might be trying to get some value for, and you don't think maybe they're going to get the value that they
think. Well, this is a report. So Mark Feinstein, Sean, I don't know if you've seen this.
I saw the story. Yeah.
So he talked to an AL exec, which could be like some Yankees guy that's out to make the Sox look bad. I don't know. You tell me. He says basically the Sox don't have a lot to trade if they do want to pivot, in the sense that Sonny Gray is limited by his contract, Aroldis Chapman is a rental, and Wilson Contreras is an acquired taste. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, I got to disagree on almost all of those points. I think Sonny Gray very much has value. That executive is perhaps forgetting that the Cardinals took back a good chunk of the Sonny Gray money. So what the Red Sox owe him is a little more than $20 million for the year. You get to the final 2 months of the year, you're talking about $6 million for a guy who's 8-1 with a 3 ERA. In a market where starting pitching is always the thing that most teams are clamoring for, I think he'd have a ton of value. And Aroldis Chapman is a rental technically, but if he gets to an absurdly low number of innings, I think it's 40, that vests for next year at $13 million. So you're talking about a guy who's been arguably the most dominant closer in either league the last year and a half, and you're getting him for a year and 2 months for, $16, $17 million? Again, there'll be plenty of interest there. I don't think they'll move Contreras. I think they like the bat he brings. I think they like the edge he brings, and the fact that they could potentially, with some option years, control him for two more years after that. That's the funny thing here, guys, is that as bad as things are, and they are bad, no getting around that, a couple of good moves in the offseason makes this team a contender, if for no other reason that the pitching is pretty good. And when you look at having a healthy Garrett Crochet, when you think about having Ranger Suarez under control, when you have Early and Peyton Tolley under control, there's 80% of your rotation locked up and certainly well above average. You've got some good pieces in Rafaela and Abreu and Contreras if you keep him. We'll see what happens with Roman Anthony. As bad as it is, they could be, with some smart offseason moves, back in this. So I don't think they're going to strip this to the ground. But I think both Gray and Chapman have considerable value out there, to the point where one might be one of the better starting pitchers available, and the other is almost inarguably going to be the best reliever.
All right. So Sean, there was a something Rob Bradford told us the other day that I just had never even thought about, and I want to get your take on this. So, Roman Anthony had a scrum the other day, and he was talking about his hand, and this has been an ongoing issue between what it actually was, a tear or a sprain, and Sam Kennedy had to come on and apologize and a misclassification and all that. But he was saying that most likely, 10 weeks is the number that he threw out there, 8, 10, I think he said 6, 8, 10, it had already been 6 weeks. And intimated that it was a pain issue, and it's really all about the pain and him trying to get past that pain to a point where he feels comfortable to play.
Right.
And
then,
so I asked Rob, I was like, well, what does he do? Does he do pregame stuff? Is he on the field pregame? And according to Rob, sure enough, he's taking grounders, he's throwing the ball around, and then he said he's like shaking people's hands on the field. I don't know why, to me, that seems strange. Does that sit strange with you that he's using his hands so much, like that when it seems like it should be healing and resting, to the point where he's shaking hands with random people?
Yeah, I hadn't given it much thought, but that might not be something you want to do too much of. I have seen him doing various drills. In fact, Saturday afternoon, I saw him out there running the bases. The idea is to, get him to continue to be in good game shape, to run, to throw, to do things that are not requiring him to follow through with that wrist, so that when he is cleared and when he isn't feeling pain while swinging, then it's a shorter comeback and rehab period for him. But I I would hope that he's being smart enough in what he's doing on the field to not invite further trouble with that hand and wrist.
Yeah, because he's, according to Rob Bradford, like, he's throwing around with that hand. Like, he throws with the hand that's injured, right?
Yes.
I don't know. It just sit weird. When he said he was, like, shaking people's hands and everything, like, that for some reason just felt, because I guess all of us from the outside looking in are like, oh, man, I hope he's doing everything to get this thing back to normal and feeling good. And he seems like he's in a lot of pain. And then you're like, I don't know, it didn't seem like it when he's out on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I think the pain that he's feeling is when he is trying to swing and follow through. That's obviously a specific motion that isn't necessarily replicated if you're glad handling people on the field.
But I guess my point is, do you think that there's part of him that doesn't feel a need to rush back seeing that the team is as bad as it is?
No, I don't think so. I mean, this is a guy, you know, this comes up from time to time about pain tolerance and players and toughness and how much they want to play through, and everyone, you know, harkens back to Dustin Pedroia playing with a broken thumb most of the
sure.
entire season. And everybody's a little different. I'm always very careful to question someone's toughness and willingness to play hurt. And also to get at someone's pride. You know, I mean, Roman signed a big extension last year. He's making a lot of money, or he's going to make a lot of money over the life of that contract. This is what these guys do for a living. They play, they compete. They want to be back out there. I don't think there's any part of them that says, you know, I'll take my time. We're not going anywhere anyway. These guys are professional athletes. Ted can speak to this. You want to be back on the field with your teammates, competing as soon as you can. So I stay away from questioning people's motives or willingness to play.
Sure. I mean, the only reason I ask it is that I think human nature, if you were somebody and you just saw this awfulness around you, you're like, you know what? Maybe instead of coming back when I'm 80%, I'll just wait till I'm 100%. You know what I mean? And as I said, this is not a knock against his toughness. I'm not going to question how he feels. But it just seems like human nature might make you go, maybe I'll continue to wait just because team's not good.
I think it is true that different guys have different expectations and a willing, you know, some guys will play through more than others. And sometimes that gets colored by an individual's situation. You know, somebody's heading for free agency.
Yeah.
You could make a case that they want to get out and prove that they're healthy before they go on the free agent market. You could make the case that that same guy doesn't want to go out and struggle and have people question whether this is a lingering thing that's going to affect him into the future.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to make any generalizations about, again, a willingness to play through stuff.
I just want him back. I just want him back.
But, you know, just from an entertainment value,
yes.
They're missing their best pitcher in Crochet.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he was off to a tough start, their most talented position player in Roman Anthony. So if they're losing, you at least want to see good individual performances. And they don't even have that at this point.
Hey, Sean, just to follow up on that, I'm curious if you think maybe at the end of the season the narrative will be that, you know, hey, this, we had a good team. We just had a lot of injuries when you considered Crochet, you know, Sonny Gray, Trevor Story, Roman Anthony being out as long as they have. Do you think that's something they're gonna say? Because, I mean, the prediction models, I guess, reportedly had this team winning 95 games. Right. I can't imagine they would win that those games, even if these guys were healthy. But do you think injuries is going to be kind of a point that they will make after the end of the season for how bad the season's gone?
Ted, I would get back to what I said earlier, that the fact that they have a solid foundation of a good rotation going forward with a mix of veteran and young guys under control, locked up for a number of years, that immediately makes them kind of in the neighborhood of competitive when they have guys that are healthy. Now, they've got to add to that, obviously, the offense is not just bad, it's historically bad. And the drop-off from when you get to about six in that batting order on a daily basis, as some evaluators have been saying, you know, that's the equivalent of like a Triple-A lineup some nights when you are running out Andrew Monasterio and Mickey Gasper and other guys that haven't proven themselves to be everyday contributors at the big league level. It's sort of, what do you expect offensively? So they've got to do more.
They've got to not only get Roman Anthony back and get him pointed in the right direction, but they've got to add to that. Then again, they didn't do that over the winter, and look where they are.
Well, Sean McAdam, great stuff. Hopefully, you know, for your sake, because as someone who has to watch every single pitch of every single game, let's just hope that they end up continuing to play at least competent baseball, just for your sake, Sean McAdam.
Well, they owe me at least that much, wouldn't you say?
Yes, they do, you know, Sean.
They are really worried about my well-being.
All right, you can read Sean McAdam at masslive.com. Appreciate you coming out with us, Sean. Thanks a bunch.
Okay, guys, thanks.
All right, when athletes ruin their reputation and have a big PR powwow to try to get it back, and when athletes get stoned on television, we'll get to that right after this. O'Toole? All right. Numa? Is this Numa from the most recent Tool album?
That's right.
Oh, very nice.
You don't think Stiz knows every song that Tool's put out?
Are you a huge Tool fan, Stiz?
I am not. So I came from up at AAF. I was a, you know, purely hip-hop kid I started working at AAF. And then Mistress Carrie took me to a Tool concert. Okay. I was forever changed.
Yeah, you see them live. You see them live and your brain will explode.
Their drummer on this song particularly, oh my God, it's insane.
Danny Carey is the best drummer alive. There's not even a question. Not even a question.
What about Annika?
Annika is replicating the best drummer alive.
What about the Chili Peppers guy?
See, Chad Smith is a really good pocket drummer. He's very good. Like, he's technically good.
Looks like Will Ferrell.
Did you see the SNL? It was the season finale, and Will Ferrell was the host, and they did a skit, and Will Ferrell was in the beginning of it. They're like, ladies and gentlemen, Will Ferrell. And it was Chad Smith of the Chili Peppers coming out, acting as if he's Will Ferrell. And he did half of the opening monologue, and then, of course, Will Ferrell comes out and stops him. Yeah, I mean, he does look exactly like
him. Can I jump in this conversation real quick? Robin passed this along to me. We were talking about the Foo Fighters. We listened to Foo Fighters. And just wondering when they'll be out on we can see him again. But they were talking about, we were talking about the drummer, Taylor Hawkins, who passed away.
Yep.
Have you seen his son, Shane Hawkins?
He's awesome. Oh. I saw him live at Boston Calling maybe like a month after Taylor had passed. The kid killed it.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable how, I forget what song it was, but they had him up on stage and 16 years old. At 16 years old, he did the drums for, I forget which song, that was not easy.
Yeah.
And it was, you just talk about, he had the look, he looks like, he could be the best drummer of all time someday.
Ted, it's crazy. There was I think it was the Taylor Hawkins, they did like a memorial concert for him, and they had a bunch of people out there, and it was on TV, and you can watch on YouTube now. But they brought out Taylor's son to play My Hero.
That's what it was. Yeah,
Like choked up.
It's My Hero. That's what it is. I got it.
And how great was that moment?
It was incredible.
It was like, it was almost chills. Like it was therapy for him. Like it was like he came out.
He hit those drums as hard as he could hit them, man.
He's awesome. And you know what? There was a lot of people trying to say he should be the new drummer for the Foo Fighters. Yeah. But I think that there's also people are saying, you know, like his family, like, dude, he's a kid. You know, we don't need to expose
him.
Let him be a kid, and then maybe sooner or later. Like, I mean, the Wolfgang Van Halen, you know, he got thrown into that when he was a kid. He played bass. And I don't know how great of a life that is. Wolfgang ended up being a good musician and did his own thing. But, you know, when Taylor's son got out there, that was a moment. Because everything inside of him, you could tell it was a cleansing.
Yeah.
It really was.
Man, unbelievable. If you get a chance, look it up. Shane Hawkins, he performs My Hero, a tribute to his dad. Some of the best video I've ever seen.
Yeah, no question. No question.
And how about Stiz? Not only a rock band aficionado now, he was citing somebody's brother on social media earlier in the sports world.
Oh, Tyler Herro.
I've been following Tyler Herro's brother.
Yeah, Tyler Herro's brother, I guess, like posted a Milwaukee Bucks logo underneath like one of Tyler Herro's posts as if, dude, you're going. Dude, if that was my brother too, I'd be busting his balls as well. You're getting traded, bro.
He's from Wisconsin, I guess. I didn't know that. Tyler Herro is a Wisconsinite.
I think he is. Do you remember when he got drafted? There's no one who looked more Malibu's Most Wanted than Tyler Herro when he got drafted. It was really awkward. Like, they're like, look at this. He goes, yo, check out my bling. He was like, no, my drip, he kept talking about.
Is South Beach overrated, by the way, Teddy?
You know what? It's not my cup of tea. I think I just look like a woolly mammoth to all those Latin girls. I mean, it is fun people watching. It's just not quite my scene. I don't think it's overrated. I think it's rated right where it should be.
Giannis would do well down there?
Dude, there is no place on the planet worse than Miami in the summer. Like, go down there right now. Brutal. It sucks. Yeah. It's just the absolute worst. Now, it is unbelievable on all the other times of the year. I mean, South Beach is one of those places that you go for two nights and then you got to leave.
Yeah.
More than that, it's you start to notice things, how scummy it is. Almost like New Orleans can be that way. New Orleans is the most fun place on the planet for 2 to 3 days. And then you start noticing like alleys with hot trash and just like all the creepy people like hanging out and, you know, the voodoo stuff. You're just like, I need to go home. Yeah, the South Beach is perfectly fine, but they all want to live there because A, it's cheap. B, there's partying all years, all year long. And if you're in your 20s or your early 30s, you know, it seems like a dream place to live. But man, that's too much for me. That's way too much for me. I wouldn't take it.
Patriots are there when this year, week 8. That's kind of early, but not too bad, right?
Not too bad.
It's good though. Won't be hot.
It's hot.
November 1st.
It's still hot. It's November 1st. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what? That's probably a really good time to go. It can be humid. And humid. You know. So, but they got that half roof over the top, which blocks out the sun, which is what I wish they had when I was playing. Just, the sun, there was no blockage of the sun. It's just that sun just beats on you. So it's not nearly as bad as it used to be. But the humidity, you know, still be something that it's a concern for.
Let's go to Kurt in Tampa. What's up, Kurt? How's it going?
Hey, while you guys are on this music kick, I just wanted to the Tartan Army. How have they not collaborated with the Dropkick Murphys yet with all the bagpipes and everything like that?
Yeah,
they did. They did sing.
Like it just needs to happen.
They did sing Shipping Up to Boston at Fenway at some point during the game. I saw that clip. It was not as impressive as some of the others, though. I don't know why. Maybe they're hesitant to.
Just because we've heard it 8 billion times, I think. Yeah. But I mean, sure, that would be perfectly fine.
Can I tell you who the best drummer in the world is?
Sure, why not? Why not go? Let's
get
go,
in there, Jackson.
It's Mike Portnoy from Dream Theater and amongst other bands.
All right, you, sir, would get along with everyone at Guitar Center.
Of course.
Anytime anyone talks Dream Theater, I'm like, I'm out. Like, you guys are right.
At the Vi concert at the Dream Theater.
You can't fight the facts. I mean, the guy.
Okay, can I just say something that's going to piss off every Guitar Center employee? There's a difference between a being a great drummer and a great drummer who plays stuff that I want to listen to.
You're telling me, like you can be super 20 years. I understand that.
You can be super technical, and if it's not like something that I want to hear or something that like is a good beat or interesting, that I don't care. Like, I mean, I there's all these like old school like jazz drummers. I don't want to listen to that garbage. The reason Danny Carey's the greatest drummer on the planet is because not only does he crush, but he plays in Tool, who make great songs.
Like, that's ironic coming from you. You listen to a lot of obscure music. No offense.
I do, but it's not math rock. Like, I hate having to. It feels like I'm doing my taxes sometime when I'm listening to bands like Dream Theater. It's like 1, 2, 3, 1, 1, 1, 2, 3, 3, 3, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. Now, Jimmy Bauer from Down, now we're talking. Because that's straight up just like crush, 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 crush. And then there's drummers who aren't very good but just look cool drumming.
Hey, Phil Collins is still alive, right?
Yes, but that dude can hardly walk.
He's not drumming, though.
Dude, he was in such bad shape when I saw him at concert. He came to the TD Garden. When the name of the tour was the Not Dead Yet Tour. And so, like, the lights go up, and he comes walking on stage, and he's got, like a cane. And I was like, oh, this is kind of funny. He's going to do, like, a Willy Walker, right? He's going to just, like, you know, do a flip and go, hey, I'm Phil Collins. Nope, that's how bad he was. And he sat at this table with like a bottle of water and sensible snacks, and just like people danced around him to make it look like there was action. Now his voice crushed. He was great, and he played Susudio and all the other hits. I mean, that guy's got a zillion hits, but he was in bad, bad shape.
Hey,
so
will you guys, you and Ken, will you team up with Curtis and do a Phil Collins cover band as a Halloween costume?
We'll be called Phil McCracken. It'll be a Scottish Phil Collins cover band. Phil McCracken. All right, 617-779-7937. The Knicks are all high. They did a big thing on TV yesterday. They were all over Good Morning America, and they're partying their ass off. And OG Anunoby is high as a kite.
He looked totally out of it.
In every single one of these clips, it's really fun to watch. On top of that, I'm telling you, every hour, there is a new insider coming out with more information about Giannis and about potentially coming to Boston. I haven't seen this much smoke really since A.J. Brown.
Did I convince you
earlier? You know what I mean?
With my big three, Reggie Miller and Nick Wright and Perk, they were all like gushing about the possibility. I mean, it just makes me tingle.
Oh,
how far are we?
Jay Williams? Add him to the list.
Jay Williams.
Yep. So we got some more of that. I just want to know, at what point do you cross over into A.J. Brown territory where you go, this is happening?
Yeah.
We're close.
Yeah.
We're getting real, real close.
The only thing with A.J. Brown, I don't think there was another team.
Right. You know,
was,
so we tried to
just the Patriots. Yeah.
That's right. Rams. Maybe the Rams.
Yeah.
So we'll get to all that right after this.
Once again, shout out to the Knicks. Next season, this season is over. Getting prepared for next season. It's any man's game. So now we back to work. Plenty of motivation to improve, get better. Me personally, I know a lot of people think like they've seen the best version of me. And you stand corrected. No matter what the situation is, no matter what the case is, I feel confident in the sense where I'm coming into my physicality, my mental game, my weaknesses are turning into my strengths. And you have not seen the best version of Jaylen Brown. So I look forward to the next season. We'll see where the chips fall. But I'm excited about that.
You know what? I feel like I'm sure some older couples get in relationships where he didn't say anything wrong there, but I'm just so tired of all the other stuff that he says that even that hits my ears wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what? Well, like if you just looked at the script of what he said, you'd be like, okay, good. He's feeling good about himself. He's getting ready for the next season. Hey, I can't wait. I really want to see the best you next year. But just because of all the other stuff, this is my best season. It's now all tainted. You're just like, yeah, whatever, dude.
Well, even if
it's too much, it's like, what's the point of all this? Other than is he trying to sell himself because he knows he's on the trademark.
Well, in bigger picture, if he thinks he's improving, he's not going to want to regress with Tatum having the ball more when he's back full season this year. He wants to, like, you just listen to him. He wants to lead a team and be the guy and have people underneath him.
See,
so
that's the confusing part. He says you listened to Gary Washburn last night, and he's basically saying that JB doesn't want to go. And there's a lot of people that think that JB doesn't want to go, but he's acting to the contrary. Mm. He's acting without – he won't say it because he doesn't have the balls to say it, but he's acting as if he wants to go somewhere. But then the minute, he's talked about maybe moving him, I think he wants both ways.
He does.
Is what he wants.
He does. He wants to be the man here. He wants the kind of respect that Jason Tatum gets.
Yeah,
that's
he does.
What he wants.
He does.
And it confuses him, I think, that why is everybody all about Jason Tatum when look at me and look what I've done. Look what I did on my own this season. I carried this team. Like, we weren't supposed to be just written off. But look what I did in the regular season.
I heard Chris Gasper. I mean, there was not about a month ago, Gasper was on this thing, rant, like, we're just JB. But he said – JB wants people to treat him like they treated Marcus Smart. You know, like Marcus Smart was traded, and dude, like kids were crying. It was unbelievable. And people who
obviously don't watch the end of games.
But you know what's interesting is there probably it was a bigger kind of affinity for Marcus Smart than there was JB. But that's what he wants. It's like, dude, you got to earn that.
Well. So Ted, that is a great point. And here's the difference between being loved and not being loved. We all agree, Jaylen Brown's a better basketball player than Marcus Smart, right?
No question.
Not even a question. But Marcus Smart bled green. Like, that dude used to say, he dyed his hair. He was all in Celtics. It wasn't, this was my best season after you just got bounced. And that's why there's people who love Marcus Smart, despite him taking some of the worst shots at ends of games.
Worst,
like,
worst.
He would chuck up threes and be like, no!
Yeah.
But he was
loved. He loved the city.
Yes, he loved the city. And it's funny how I keep saying this. We're tainting our vision of Jaylen Brown, the basketball player, who is an excellent basketball player, with what he is off the court. It's just, it's affected all of our vision of who he is much we would miss him if he was gone.
But I do think Jaylen Brown likes the city. He's given a lot to the city. He definitely goes into the communities and does events. He's around all the time. It's not like he just flies out of here off season. I want to give him credit for that.
No. Yeah. But he doesn't hate the city. It's just comments that are just so tone deaf.
No doubt.
Like, at the end of the season, like, if he just didn't say any of that stuff, if he just disappeared,
he'd have been better off.
Yes.
Well, what about in the middle of the season? Remember, Ted, we spoke about this, about when he was like, when my career's done here, you may never see me again. Talking like to the Celtics fans.
Yeah.
That was crazy
true,
too. It's tone deaf.
It is tone deaf. He just doesn't get it.
All right, Gino, line one, you got to defend your guy, Jaylen Brown here. What's up, Gino?
Hey, what's going on? Number one, I wouldn't say he wouldn't have the balls to say this on your trade because he wants to stay here.
Then say it.
It's very annoying that you guys take what he says and analyze it. Like, literally, you guys, it's not what he said, but it's what he says. Like, come on, guys. He plays his ass off when he's here. He's better than JT in my mind. I'd rather JT go, but let's keep them both here.
But stop with the slander. Give my guys a little bit more credit than him being a good basketball player. Overall, he's a Celtic. He's what you want to be as a Celtic. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't understand the hate. I really don't.
Well, I mean, listen, I first of all, you're completely wrong about him being better than Jason Tatum. I mean,
I think if you put their careers up right now, it's close. I mean, one has five All-Stars, the other has six. One's an NBA Finals MVP, one's two-time second team. I mean, Tatum has more first-team All-NBA selections.
Tatum is a better all-around player. He's mastered more parts of the game than Jaylen Brown is. Now, Jaylen Brown is very close. He's very close. He's an excellent player. And as I said, I've never sat here and ripped on his basketball skills. I think he's a great player, and they're going to miss a lot if they end up trading him and getting Giannis here instead. Like, I mean, he is a great player. He's not better than Tatum. Tatum's figured the game out. Mm-hmm. There's not many aspects of this game that he hasn't mastered. Jaylen turns the ball over too much. He dribbles it off his leg. There's just he's an all-around better player.
And I also got to say this to his point. He's, you know, leave him alone. You guys are parsing his words. It's like he tells you what he wants. No, he doesn't. He's very. I think he isn't forthcoming. He kind of is passive aggressive in what he says. He's not clear in exactly what he's thinking. So we're left to think for him.
I love Boston. If it was up to me, I could play in Boston for the next
team. All right. Well, that was early in the offseason. Now,
what does he say? Like, watch, when I'm done, y'all never gonna see me again.
Ooh, never gonna see him again.
See, so I mean, he talks out of both sides of his mouth, man. So
they'll retire number seven at some point, right? Don't you think? One title. He and Tatum both gonna have the jerseys retired.
By the way, somebody
they retire jerseys all the time.
Somebody just texted and said, "I too would keep Jaylen Brown over Jason Tatum." I mean, I'd love to hear from
There's no way the Celtics ever would.
Well, they love Tatum.
Which one's more marketable? Which one sells more jerseys? Which one is in the commercials?
Tatum.
Yeah, same close.
But a lot of people think that JB has more of that dog in him than Tatum.
That could be true.
I mean, that could be true.
That could absolutely be true.
I think one of the greatest debates is if this season was flip-flopped and it was, you know, Jaylen Brown that had the Achilles tear and it was Jason Tatum that was healthy, would they have won as many games as they did in the regular season? And I question that for that very reason.
Bigger point to me, I think Nick Wright nailed it. This is the shakeup the Celtics need at this time. They just stylistically need to force themselves to get away from the way they have been. It's time to try something new.
I agree.
And trading Jaylen Brown forces that.
Okay,
I agree.
This is not a 100% fair comparison, but do you believe that having Kyrie around stunted the growth of Jason Tatum?
I think he is who he is.
Jason Tatum?
I don't think he was.
They cleared the deck, and Tatum was essentially the guy along with, you know, Jaylen Brown was there too. But, I mean, when they got rid of the other stars, that Jason Tatum didn't immediately have growth as a player because he had more responsibility on his shoulders. Maybe, just maybe, they're thinking if Jaylen Brown was gone, that might make Jason Tatum an even better player than he already is.
That
he can be the commander. He's the guy. Right. Mm-hmm. Like there's not as much redundancy as we've got right now with these two players because Giannis is such a big, it's a totally different type of player. It's things that, you know.
Perhaps, yeah, maybe.
Maybe perhaps that's what they're thinking.
Yeah. You never know. I don't think that's a bad.
Now, would Giannis stunt that growth? Would you worry about that? Like,
no.
If he comes in and
it's a totally different player. As a matter of fact, I think it would actually help him. I think having a big like that that you could rely on would help his game. I believe so.
Yeah, I mean, that'll take work too, by the way. I love the idea of Giannis, obviously, but he will take the ball and drive it a lot. Like, he's going to take – there will be times you're not getting it back from Giannis. He's just going to the hoop.
Man, I think there would be a time in JT's career where it's like he wants to help. Looks forward to having somebody else to take some of the pressure off of him. And if Giannis is that guy, I think he would – you know, I would let – the thing is, it feels as if those two – like each other. They have a mutual trainer that they work with that's on the staff. So it just feels as if that partnership would be better off than the one that's – we've seen it work once a couple years ago, but to me, that was kind of – look.
Is Tatum coming to Jaylen's defense? If he wants to keep this together, we would have heard something from him, right? I mean, nothing.
I think he's got a very smart PR team that tell him to stay out of all this. You want to keep making Doritos commercials. You want to be loved by – you don't say anything at all. It would have helped Jaylen Brown. It's just for the perception from the fans. Hmm. Like, as
so
I said, if he just wouldn't have said anything, there wouldn't be any controversy for people to bitch about.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, people are reading into the stuff that he's saying.
You talking about JT coming on my stream, and what did that have to do with anything?
Sorry about that.
I mean, listen, you know, I'm He didn't come on, even though you teased that he was going to be on, and then he backed out the last
He's supposed
minute.
To be doing journalism.
Yeah, journalism. All right, so it sounds, according to reports, and this is the most exciting thing about all the honest news that's come out, it sounds like the Celtics are trying to make something happen in which they can get Giannis without giving up either one of the Jays. If Brad Stevens is able to pull that off, I'm telling you, you're gonna. If there's any guy that can do it, he could be the guy. He's damn good at his job, and we will talk next to Ty Windisch, who covers Giannis and the Bucks. He's a reporter for the Eurostep podcast and has covered this team for a long time, and he'll let you know what's happening behind the scenes, including what Miami is up to.